welcome to Quantum of Solace.
Al, you're back. I had at least, well, I had only one letter complaining that you weren't around at the last one. Also several letters complaining that I wasn't away. But never mind.
There was some good feedback. Some people liked the there wasn't music.
Yeah, no, I don't like that. Sorry, that's not good for... People are out, you're out going for a walk. You need it all broken up. There's different things. So no. No, I switched off. I got bored. So
you're going to have to make do with my choice of music. Sorry.
Let's go to something that's just absolutely huge. A sacred gift of heaven. For better or worse, wherever. I keep opening my mouth at what I read in the news thinking, no, we cannot get this stupid. We really cannot get this stupid. This is the Royal College of Midwives, whose job is to help babies be born. And they are saying that they now want abortion on demand up to full term.
This is an attack that's been going on since the year dot, hasn't it? I mean, it's Exodus chapter 1. It's 3,500 years ago that the state was using the midwives to try and kill babies.
Their chief executive, Kathy Warwick, is also the chair of the British Pregnancy Advisory Service, which is kind of the Planned Parenthood of the United Kingdom. And it's again an example of the elites giving each other jobs and having triple, quadruple jobs. But she has, on her own, made this a policy. And there's been a huge uproar from midwives and from other people as well.
They've pledged support for the campaign to decriminalise all abortion up to birth for any reason. And there's five arguments that they make, but the arguments don't change.
Let's go to the five arguments apart from Herod tells us to do it, or right. The Pharaoh tells us to do it.
The first argument is that it denies a woman fundamental rights to compel a woman to endure pregnancy and childbirth unless she's got legal authorisation to have an abortion is to deny her the right to control her own body, plan her own family, and determine her own life course. So, David, how do you answer that? It's a woman's body. It's her right to choose.
That argument is easily answered with one simple thing. How many bodies are involved?
Yeah.
So there are actually three, because the father has to pay paternity and everything else. So I'm sorry, but men have bodies too. But you're right. There is a specific, you know, the woman has a greater responsibility, but there is a child there.
So the question is, is there one body or is there two?
Yeah, and if there's two, then that whole argument just doesn't work. And it doesn't work. I mean, I have just, yesterday I was visiting a couple in our congregation who've just had a baby girl. You know, it was a long labor. It was 3 days worth of labor. Do I say to the mother, do you know, 2 days into that labor, you had the right to kill that child because you were having so much pain? I mean, the thing is absolutely insane. So there's no argument there. Next, please.
It's unfair that a woman could be imprisoned for causing their own miscarriage. If a woman takes abortion medication at home that would induce a miscarriage, then they could be sent to prison for life.
One, they're not going to be sent to prison for life. And two, we're not. And I don't think we're actually arguing for that. And three, is it unfair that a woman would be sent to prison if they killed their baby when it was 1 day out of the womb as opposed to 1 day within it?
Okay.
So again, the same thing still applies. I mean, what they're attempting to do is make extreme cases and say, okay, this is law should apply to all. So no, again, it doesn't work. Next.
It deters doctors and compromises women's care. A doctor who provides safe abortion care to a woman, safe for whom, who has requested it without the approval of a second doctor can be sent to prison. Basically, there's a threat of prosecution and it deters doctors from getting into this field of women's health care. So that means that some women are unable to find a doctor who's willing to help them. It compromises the care that's been given to women.
Well,
do you know what's the common theme that's going through here?
Yeah.
It's the language that's been used to frame.
Yeah, but that, I mean, again, that's not a difficult one to answer because despite the kind of postmodern use of language and, oh, you've got to be, you know, it's like, are you for motherhood and apple pie? Bottom line is, I want doctors to be deterred from breaking the law. That's the point of having a law. So the fact that doctors could be in trouble if they break the law of the land, duh. Sorry, doesn't work again. Next.
Right. It's at odds with fundamental legal principles. Right. What they're saying here is that because abortion remains within the criminal law, it's in conflict with the legal principle that a person's body is their own. Nobody should be compelled to undergo medical intervention against their will. It's unfair that a living woman can be compelled to sustain a fetus against her will from the moment an egg is implanted in her womb.
Well, you use the same argument for infanticide. I'm sorry. The whole argument there is, well, is it fair to ask a woman to feed and nurture a child and use her body for that and all the sleepless nights and everything else that's involved with that? So I'm sorry. Again, that only works if the baby in the womb is not a baby.
Yeah.
So that objection, again, is a facetious objection.
Right.
Next, let's have
public opinion supports women's choice. Public opinion on abortion is more liberal than the law, with 2/3 of people believing that abortion should be allowed according to the woman's choice, compared to 1/3 30 years ago.
As you well know, 87% of statistics are just made up. Yeah. But let me give you some more. A Comres poll in March 2014 found that 88% of women favoured an explicit ban on sex-selective abortion. Only 2% of women in an Angus Reid poll found that they wanted the abortion time limit extended beyond 24 weeks, and 59% of women favoured a reduction in time limits. So public opinion is actually against what she's saying. She's not concerned about public opinion. This is elitist opinion. This is exactly the kind of thing that we have to deal with.
Okay. So actually, bottom line, all these arguments are dealt with by the question, well, is there one body or is there two?
Yes, and also the when you examine the arguments, you know, they use buzzwords because they really are okay. Ridiculous arguments. Remember, morning always comes as night surrenders to the sun. No matter how dark it may become, yeah, don't stop your light from shining on. There was a tragic story, actually, about a sexual abuse victim who was killed under the Dutch euthanasia laws. She was suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder as a young lady in her 20s. She had depression, hallucinations, severe anorexia. And the psychiatrist had said there was no prospect or hope for her. She experienced her suffering as unbearable, so therefore she was killed a year ago under the Dutch laws. And there's a woman in Italy. Yeah, the woman in Italy. I mean, that's... Dutch one is really, really sad, but it's, of course, where we're going. The Italian one is also sad. An Italian woman has paid $14,000 to commit suicide at a euthanasia clinic in Switzerland. The reason she did so, she was weighed down by age. She was 85, in very good health, and the inevitable loss of the looks of which she was proud. Her family members thought she'd gone on a spa break. That, again, is the inevitable direction we go once we legalize euthanasia. It's someone always feels, oh, I don't want to be ugly. Too bad. And again, it's very sad.
I'm just kind of struck by the contrast between the two worldviews that these euthanasia cases bring up. So if there were no God and if the atheistic worldview was true, then do you know what? Yeah, there is no hope. But there is a God. There is always hope because it's a God who can restore bodies, who can restore minds, and whether it's in this world or in the world to come. You know?
Though outwardly we waste away, yet inwardly we're being renewed day by day. Now, we want to help people think through these issues, and I have just seen, I don't think you've seen it yet, have you?
No, not yet, the new magazine.
I've just seen the new magazine. I haven't seen it in print. I've seen the articles for it, and they're largely on bioethics. A lot of them are on bioethics, and it is phenomenal. And we really need to be able to think through these beginning of life issues and these end of life issues as well. So do make sure you get your magazine.
When is the new magazine out?
Beginning of June.
Okay.
That's what we're hoping.
All right. You can register for it online at solacemagazine.com. You will be issued with a rifle on arrival. Chaps for education, education and war. We're going to need a lot more cannons. We're going to need a lot more cannons. Trident.
Do you know how much Trident was supposed to cost?
Oh, 100 billion?
Yeah, to have 4 new Trident submarines. And in case anyone doesn't know, the Trident submarine is meant to be Britain's nuclear deterrent, which is, of course, dependent on America. And we were told it would be £100 billion to replace. Well, like all government contracts, never, ever, ever believe what they tell you. It is now going to be £205 billion.
That's obscene.
It's obscene.
It's obscene. For a toy we're never going to use.
I'm sorry, but I honestly think it's a virility symbol. I mean, there are other people who will be prepared to make a case for Trident. I know even that there are Christians who will defend that. And maybe you can argue for nuclear weapons as a means of keeping peace. I would dispute it.
Well, the other side have it. Yeah.
Yeah. I would disagree with you. But you could at least make that case. But $205 billion.
But David, do you remember the Yes Prime Minister argument for this? It's the best, and Britain must have the best.
I know. Oh, I don't know. I mean, I just despaired when I saw that. I mean, now, it may be that you're listening to this and you're a Christian. You say, yeah, I'm all for nuclear weapons. Well, that's fine. Write us and give us the case.
You can email us at quantum@solace-cpc.org. There is no one like us.
The BBC. Let's talk about the BBC.
The BBC, there's been an internal report within the BBC written by Akil Ahmed, who's the head of religion and ethics, and he's basically saying that there's too much Christian programming on the BBC, and it's unfair to other faiths who deserve to be represented. We're now a pluralistic country. What about Muslims? What about Sikhs? What about Hindus? We need some more programming for them. What do you make of it?
Okay, I would argue, yeah, go for it. I would say, let's have programming on the BBC that's in proportion to the size of the religion. And I would say, that's fine, you want to do that, but also I would want to ask, as an evangelical Christian,
can we have some proper Christianity?
There are 2 million, can we have some real Christianity?
Or some more. I mean, there's some BBC content's quite good, and then
yes,
others is just this warm...
I love the BBC.
Warm and fluffy guff. We don't need more warm and fluffy guff.
Yeah. Basically... Stop banning me from the BBC. That's all I want to say. Look, I wouldn't have to create these podcasts if you let me on.
You know what I'd like to see the BBC do? And it's something I don't think they'll touch it with a barge pole because they're not brave enough to do it. Yeah. But if you look at the success of programs like Unbelievable, yeah, where you actually get a proper, robust debate between different religions, yeah, probably the single best thing you could do for community relations between the different religious communities in the UK would be to have, you know, that robust debate between believers, between Muslims and Christians, between Sikhs and Hindus.
That Sorry, is you a, say Sikhs?
Sikhs and Hindus.
Yeah, okay. I'm just a new religion, Sikhism. That's an amalgamation of Hinduism and Sikhism. That's
okay,
cool.
But you realize I'm in charge of the editing of this, so this
Yeah,
one
no, no, no.
It,
this one's going out. You make this one go out.
Right.
As it is, because we're going to do this. Listen, right, yeah, you're right.
But way to tackle it is to actually have that proper, robust debate.
Not the bland stuff that people come out with. So yeah, I'm all for diversity. Because I think that's what we end up not having. I think we end up with a lot of bland stuff. So, yeah, absolutely. Please, BBC, let's have more variety in religious broadcasting and let's have more real Christianity.
Okay.
Why not? Let's
absolutely.
Go for it.
There's some interesting news from the world of book retailers. It seems that for the first time last year, the first time in how many years? 5 years, that hard copy books have now outsold Kindles.
Yeah, it's what they call peak digital has come and gone. Last year...
Is that like peak oil and peak SNP?
Like the Publishers Association said that digital content fell from £563 million to £554 million. And physical book sales turned up from £2.74 billion to £2.76 billion. Now, there's a whole range of different things happening there, but I wonder where you are in this great debate. Kindle or book?
I prefer books, but I've just started getting into Kindle, but I don't have a Kindle yet. I use the Kindle app on my phone or on my iPad. That's I love the fact for Kindle that you get it straight away, you don't have to wait, but I still prefer a book you can flick through.
Yeah.
That's my choice.
I loved what it said in the Guardian article, but just buying, handling, giving, and talking about a book seems to have caught the magic dust of experience. A book is beauty. A book is a shelf, a wall, a home. And I agree with that. I didn't know this until I read this article, that Waterstones have stopped selling Kindles. And Amazon's opened its first bookshop. First literal bookshop.
Do you know what we need to do at Solace? We need to produce our own Kindle ebooks as well.
Yeah.
We need to put the Solace papers onto ebook.
Yeah, but again, I'd be interested to hear what our listeners do, because I think for me, it's interesting. I'll tell you how I operate. I mean, I do a lot of reading, so it's very different for me. I always have a good hardback book on the go.
Mm.
I maybe have a couple of paperback books, but I use Kindle now for two things. One, classics that you get for virtually nothing.
Yeah.
You know, what am I reading on Kindle just now? I'm reading Aquinas Summa Theologica, which is like forever. It's like, it says I've got 24 hours to go in it. You know? But I read a wee bit at a time. That's fine. Then I'm reading a Nick Hornby novel on Kindle as well. And that's great, because if I'd read it in paperback, it would just go in the bin afterwards. Yeah. So those things. But then I might read a book on Kindle that's quite cheap and think, I want to buy that in hardback. But I've noticed a big change as well. What's happening now is new books coming out, they're charging almost as much in Kindle as they are in, you know, physical form, which is a bit of a nerve, because to actually produce and sell and so on obviously has to be a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
So when I look at it, if I'm given a choice, unless the Kindle is a lot cheaper,
then
I normally won't go for the Kindle. I'll go for the book now. And certainly hardback, nothing will ever replace hardback books and the smell of hardback books. And I think heaven will be filled with dusty, musty, secondhand theological volumes, even though we won't need the theology there.
I do a lot of downloading audiobooks, so I tend to listen to books rather than read. But that's faith comes by hearing.
Well, we encourage you to read. We encourage you to get the Solas magazine. We encourage you to listen. And if you've got any subjects you want us to talk about, let us know, and we'll see you next week.
And we'll post up all the links to the stories that we've talked about in this week's program on the Solas blog under Quantum 67. You can find the blog at solas-cpc.org. God bless.
Yo. We're part of a culture that really loves to hate us. Every chance they get, they attempt to isolate and debate us. It's not that they don't like us, it's just they don't like God in us. It's common knowledge, and oddly enough, it makes a lot of sense to a lot of us. We completely understand because we used to occupy the same space and lived in a similar type state until we tasted of God's grace. So we continue loving this world that so easily rejects us and passionately press past the lack of their cultural acceptance. And as if there weren't enough problems for us gaining influence, we keep fighting over the issue of what's too worldly of a Christian to make a difference. So no matter how you paint it or politically campaign it, whether you water it down and drain it, it's really all the same, ain't it? It's the same frustration, same constant segregation. Christians living like aliens trying to relate with citizens of a different nation. What always makes for a better presentation than bark and bite is a proper understanding of living life filled with salt and light. So we walk this fine line of walking in light of God's kindness and live with a sense of worldliness without the fear of compromising. Loving God and neighbor until Christ comes to split the sky or die in a society hailing Jesus as Messiah. Yep.